Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
I am so struck at the remarkable range and such quite literally good stories, great stories in this our weekly Now the Good News segment. Tonight's a standout. I want you to meet Keryn Redpath. She's moved from a very normal, happy start to life to such a spiral, given less than 2 hours to live because of her quite shocking drug abuse, only to survive despite two encounters with death. It's quite a story, quite a spiritual journey. Keryn Redpath, welcome to Open House.
Thanks, Lee. How are you?
Terrific, thanks. All the better for talking to you now that I know your story.
Thank you.
Your childhood didn't seem to reflect any of the darkness that you would have faced later in life. Tell us briefly about those early years.
I had a wonderful childhood. I had loving, hard-working parents and two brothers, and I was healthy and fit and sporty, loved horse riding. Dad bought a ski boat and I did a lot of skiing when I was younger. So lots of friends. I did pretty well when I was young. I was very fortunate, yeah.
Until you were a teenager and you began experimenting with drugs.
And yeah, I just hit that age where, you know, kids start taking risks a bit and rebelling a little, I guess. And I tried, the first thing I ever smoked actually was a revolting cigar, but it was just, you know, the whole rebellion side of it, I guess. And then had a few drinks and doors just began to open. And before long, I guess, I was offered a joint somewhere at a party. And as I said, very vulnerable at that age and didn't think that it would ever lead to anything serious. But unfortunately, I was wrong, yeah.
And tell us about a fateful trip to Kathmandu, Keryn.
Yes, when I was 19, I went with my best girlfriend at the time off to Kathmandu, and I wasn't there very long before I started getting sick, and it ended up that I'd contracted typhoid. Now, I'd had my typhoid shots, but I actually had another strain, Salmonella paratyphoid A, and fortunately, I decided to come home, and I was home for about 6 weeks. In that time, I was rounding up some cattle on a horse, and a motorbike came around the corner and scared all the cattle. My horse spun round, fell over, and I broke a leg. And all of a sudden, the delirium and the typhoid side effects started coming back again. And I ended up in Fairfield Infectious Diseases Hospital with Salmonella paratyphoid A and a broken leg. So,
With a heavy drug dependency at the same time.
At that time, no. That time wasn't when I'd only been just starting to smoke a bit of marijuana and hash and stuff. And that the heavier drugs came after that, yeah.
So that was lots of partying, which is, you know, no crime, but drugs, magic mushrooms, heroin.
All of that started after I moved to live down the country town in Victoria and got into a bit more of the party scene and lots of magic mushrooms growing down there and got into a bit of that and just more and more smoking, a few trips and just whatever was around I started. I was working and thought that I was just having a bit of fun. And it wasn't until a few years of doing all that sort of stuff that a friend actually told me they'd been using heroin. And I was curious and, you know, by then the doors just open. You know, once you start down that path, it's sort of like a slippery slope and I tried heroin, and before too long, I was hooked on heroin, yes.
I think it's one of the things that I always seek to get people like you to explain to young people without being judgmental or, you know, goody-two-shoes about it all. But it is just such an easy step to take initially. But it's a very, very important line to cross.
Absolutely, absolutely. Look, you know, I've mentioned that I'm actually speaking in schools now with an anti-drug presentation, and this is what I tell them. It's just, you know, you've got to be so careful because you're so vulnerable in that age and a lot of it's trying to fit in, but there's other reasons that people use drugs and alcohol as well. But it's just so easy because, you know, you don't ever think anything bad's going to happen. Even when you start to hear stories that happen to others, it's always other people, you know, not you. You know, I had no idea what was coming up with me. So
you went through some quite violent hallucinations.
Well, the hallucinations and that were kind of mainly the trip side of thing. But what happened later was that after about 4 years of using hard drugs, I was working full-time, so I thought I had it under control. The sort of people who had a real drug problem were those who used, you know, three times a day, four times a day or more, whereas I was using two, three, four, five times a week. So I thought I had it under control. And I started to have some, after about 4 years, some weird symptoms. And long story short, I was diagnosed with hepatitis B. I was then given 2 months off work, and at the end of that 2 months, I was still really ill. It's a nasty illness anyway, Hep B, but I Obviously, we discovered later that I had complications, and I was given a further 2 months off work, and I was still really ill, so I was given a further 2 months off work. At the end of 6 months, look, I was so sick, a girlfriend bought me a scarf or something to knit just because I was sick, and I couldn't knit one row without being totally exhausted and out of breath. So Mum took me to a different specialist who did an ECG and was horrified and referred me to a specialist at the Alfred Hospital, a big major hospital in Victoria, in Melbourne, the following day. And by then I was almost collapsing, and I collapsed on the steps while Mum parked the car actually at the hospital. And the professor that day diagnosed me with heart and kidney failure. And I was raced through the hospital on a trolley into the coronary care ward, and at that point I was given less than 2 hours to live, So pretty serious stuff, yeah.
You do speak of a presence you felt during some of your drug overdoses?
Not during the overdoses. The times, what are you, the presence of God?
Yeah, well, I was wondering whether you think that
that
was.
Things happened. When I'd been in hospital for... that first day that I was in there, the doctors had me, with tubes and pumps and coming out. What did I have? An oxygen drip and an oxygen mask and octopus drip in my arm and catheters and all sorts of blood pressure monitor. But they said to my family, they had drugs, they'd actually run Canberra for permission to use one particular drug they were using. But they said to my family, they thought I had a form of cardiomyopathy, and the only chance I had of survival was to have a heart transplant. But I needed that within 2 hours, and I think we all know what the transplant waiting lists are like. And I also had less than 5% function of both kidneys. So they said my kidneys would not survive a surgery even if we found a heart in, such a short time. And at that point they said, look, all you can do now is pray. And it just so happened that my older brother had been a Christian for about 3 years, and he called on everyone he knew, his pastor and everyone he knew, and they began to pray. Naturally, as you can see, I survived, but on my fourth day in hospital, I had an angiogram, and the result was bad. The doctor said the damage to my body was so severe that no one could possibly survive it, and I was still waiting lying around the coronary care ward waiting to die. I was very, very ill. When your heart and kidneys fail, your body fills with fluid, and I had lumps of fluid all over my body. My lungs were filling, and I could barely breathe. I knew I was not well. But the prayers continued for me, and on the seventh day, the doctors were kind of scratching their heads, wondering why I was still alive, so they sent me off for another scan of my heart. And the following day, I had three doctors, specialists, come and see me and say, this is amazing, it's not that's not the same heart, it's like you have a new heart. That was absolutely amazing.
So what do you attribute that to?
Well, I know now. I didn't become, find a faith in God myself for 3 years after that. But I'm sure that those prayers were answered, because I can see all the facts. I know what the doctors saw, and, how seriously ill I was. I know how ill I felt. I was dying, and that was, my blood pressure was, 200 and something over 100, way, way above what it should have been. I'd had grand mal seizures. At one point I went into a coma. I ended up spending nearly 5 months in the Alfred Hospital because my kidneys took a lot longer to heal. And in that time, I did have, as I said, many multiple grand mal seizures and one that left me in a coma. I had two code blues where the alarms rang around the hospital, when I was facing imminent death and all the emergency doctors raced to my side. So it was a pretty hairy time.
I'm so struck by the undeniable turnaround in your health and physical condition. Kidneys improved. You've now got three children who, after all you've been through, I'm sure mean the world to you.
Oh, look, I'm absolutely blessed, honestly. I was told I would never have any children, and when you're told that, if you ever wanted children, you'd desperately want them then. I lost one, had to have one. I had one pregnancy terminated at the insistence of my doctors because of my illness, and I was absolutely devastated because I'd caused it all myself. And then when I fell pregnant again, I was told again that I couldn't go through with it, and I decided to go, take the chance. I just could not go through with losing another child, and that baby's now 27 years old.
Wow.
And he's wonderful. He's a youth leader and a diesel mechanic. And my second child is now... what happened in between time, I was invited to a miracle meeting, and I thought, this is kind of wacky, I don't know about this. And I'd started feeling a bit incomplete with only one baby, and I still had only 40% function of both kidneys. My heart was strong by now, but my kidney function wasn't really very strong. And I finally decided maybe I'll go to this miracle meeting, and who knows, maybe there'll be a God and he can heal me, and I'll say, thanks a lot, see you later, God. So it just so happened they met that week, and that was only once a month, this meeting. And I went along to the meeting, and Pastor Nancy Harkin stood up and spoke, and she shared her story about how she'd had heart and kidney failure, and God had healed her. Well, you know, I felt like someone was pointing straight at me.
Yeah.
They didn't know me from a bar of soap, and you know, it was. I went up the front for prayer, and that's where I actually really felt a touch of God. I poured out my problems to her, and she prayed for me, and my kidneys function actually began to improve after that for the first time in 3 years. And then I had my second son, and then my third child, who's a daughter, who's now, I've got, so 27, 24, and 21. So.
And you're clear of hepatitis?
I've got no hepatitis B. I have also had somewhere along the line hepatitis C, and I'm one of the 20% who have spontaneously recovered from hepatitis C. And the autoimmune disease that I had, what happened when I got so sick was my antibodies actually attacked my body, as in my heart and my kidneys and arterial system, rather than the hepatitis B. And I should have had that autoimmune disease for life, and I no longer have that either. So I'm just really, really blessed.
So what do you say at the end of it all?
What do I say at the end of it all? Oh, you know, I praise God that he's given me another chance at life. And you know, I feel, you know, now that I'm sharing my message in schools, I wrote this book last year, Out of the Darkness, and it was a teacher who read my book, invited me to speak with his Year 11 students, and it went so well, the kids responded so well, and the staff, that I thought, I've really got something here. And, you know, I've been one of those many millions of people who always had a morbid fear of public speaking.
Yes.
And yet one day I woke up and I realised, this is not about me. And that's what's given me the boldness to do it. And I still stand up with my heart pounding. But with a lot of prayer and by the grace of God, I've got a really powerful message, and the kids listen. And I have feedback forms at the end and question time, and I have a great response from the kids. You know, there's no guarantees.
No.
But I've got a lot of horror stories to tell kids about drugs and alcohol. And this is my aim, to get to as many schools and young people as I can while I'm still here and breathing.
What a great work. And now you're live on the radio across Australia. Karen Redpath, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
It's a wonderful story. Good on you.
Okay.
So the book is Out of the Darkness, and we've just posted the details up on our Open House community Facebook page. Across Australia, this is Open House.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.